The Eight Pillars of Joy. That's our series that we're in right now, and doesn't it seem appropriate that one of those pillars would be humor? So last week it was humility, this week it's humor, and we're going to see how those two go together. So where does one go these days for clean jokes? That was a question I had for myself. And so I reached for a classic, Church Bulletin Bloopers. So we just finished our flooring, as you know, downstairs in the office. It is beautiful, by the way, and I want to give big thanks to all those of you who donated. We raised half the cost, so we were able to offset that by generous donations. And then our staff got lots of support from really dedicated volunteers, such as Dimitri and Mark and Dave and Hugh and Jeff. They painted, they patched, they prepared, they moved furniture, and of course, Charlene headed it all up. So big thanks to all who contributed to making that a possibility for us. So this is what was in one of the church bulletins around the idea of flooring. And of course, it was somebody else's bulletin, not ours. This is the way it reads. Next Sunday, a special collection will be taken to defray the cost of our new flooring. All those wishing to do something on the new floor will be invited forward and given a piece of paper. I know it's bad, but I appreciate the laughter right here in the room. That's very helpful. So truly, as we know, it takes a village to do ministry, as I just outlined, just that project, that many hands were in the process. And it takes a village to make every little decision in ministry as well, which sometimes can be a little tedious. But, you know, in the end, we always have a better product when everybody gets to share their opinions on whatever it is that we're doing. And the truth is, ministry is all about relationships, all about community. So I'm thinking back to the first time I walked into a Unity ministry. And in this ministry, the ministers were Mike and Sarah. Now, to put it in context, my only church experience prior to that had been in the most conservative sect of the Lutheran church. That's where I grew up. And in that experience, the minister came in with flowing robes, and then his face often turned really red as he preached about hellfire and damnation. And then his message was punctuated with some kind of dirgy hymn before and after. And then at the end of the service, it was a very formal process. We couldn't leave our seats. And as a kid, you know, pretty anxious to go home and get my play clothes on. But we had to wait until the men in often three-piece suits came along and nodded us out of the row one by one. So you can imagine that this experience in a Unity church was pretty unfamiliar. So it's the first day. And up the aisle comes the janitor. He's wearing jean shorts and a sweatshirt. He's got this big loop of keys around his belt loop, and it's clanking as he goes. And I'm thinking, he must be fixing something on the stage or something. And then he picks up the microphone, and he starts talking. And talking and talking and talking. This should be my cue. It's the minister, right? Not the custodian. And it turns out this guy was really funny. And it was Mike. Reverend Mike took the resources he used for the week typically were drawn from the movies he watched and the comic strips he read. And it worked for all of us. And it also was really nicely balanced because Sarah gave these much more thoughtful and serious, you know, more meaty kinds of messages. Seemed like a perfect match. But then I come to find out they're divorced and they're still doing ministry together, which was really interesting. Well, eventually Sarah decided to take a break from ministry, and Mike actually unexpectedly made his transition. So Sarah, when she finally came back from her ministry and hiatus, it seemed like Mike's spirit of humor had descended upon her. And she was now not only thoughtful in her messages, but really funny. And so she told this story about the time while she was on hiatus. She said that she took a job for a while as a restaurant hostess. And one day she walked in and one of her young coworkers had Julia Cameron's The Artist Way in her arm. And Sarah was so excited to make a connection like this at work, you know, in this new environment that she was making a spiritual connection. And she said, oh my gosh, yeah, you're reading The Artist Way. And she, you know, at the time she was actually planning a retreat with Julia Cameron, and she said, you know, I just talked to Julia this morning on the phone. Now, this young girl, about 20 years old, does one of these. Yeah, right. And she's, you know, popping her gum while she does this and sort of nodding and smirking. And Sarah, and then she finally just starts laughing, and she said, oh, excuse me, Sarah, I have to go call my friend Oprah. And then she flips around, and she laughs all the way into the kitchen. And you can still hear the laughter from the other side. And there's Sarah standing watching this kitchen door, you know, swing back and forth, hearing the laughter. And she said it was at that moment that I realized I had lost all sense of status. And so, you know, our humility and our humor, they often go hand in hand. A big part of the humorous walk is the ability to laugh at ourselves. And it's no surprise that these are all connected. You know, the root, as I mentioned last week, the Latin root of the word humility and human is the same. It's humus, not the dip, but it is humus, and it means earth. And so, too, is the root word for humor. So they're all connected. And, you know, certainly it is when we laugh at ourselves, when we are able to relax, come back down to earth in this way, that we share our humanity. We share our common humanity in that kind of lightness and of being, in the laughter. So there is an adage that laughter is the most direct line between two people. It sure seems like that's the truth. And so when we are able to laugh at ourselves, we're able to stand side by side and behold our humanity in a lighter way. It's something that actually creates a feeling of oneness. So as you might know by now, if you've been following us these 3 weeks so far in our series, these eight pillars of joy come from these two amazing spiritual world leaders. They are our elder brothers, His Holiness the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. And there is no shortage of photos of them laughing together. I just picked one. But they really embody not only joy and all these pillars that they have given us in the Book of Joy, and the subtitle of that book is Lasting Happiness in a Changing World. And it came out of their time together being interviewed and sharing together, which was really special because they're close, but mostly they've, you know, over the years, only been involved together in kind of formal ceremonies. So they got to be really together and to share about this thing they share in their ministry, in their spirituality, in their world leadership, joy. And humor in particular, both of these guys are really funny, mischievous, and they laugh often and easily. All great things for us to learn from as spiritual leaders. So as I mentioned, one of the ways that we can, you know, cultivate humor in our lives is the ability to laugh at mistakes when mistakes are made, when we make mistakes, maybe even when someone else makes a mistake, to be able to lighten things up a little bit. Like, for example, the businessman who sent some flowers to his friend who was opening a new location for his business. He was really excited to get over to the reception and to see the flowers that he had sent, except he was super disappointed because the inscription said, "Rest in peace." Not only was he disappointed, he actually was kind of outraged. And so he went, I don't know if you can be kind of outraged, he was outraged. And so he went to the florist immediately and he explained what had happened, and he was just, you know, kind of storming and raging. And she sort of broke the ice a little bit. The tension began to melt a little bit as they talked, and she apologized, and she said she would definitely give him a full refund. And then she said, you know, though, just think about it for a minute. Somebody out in a funeral home has a beautiful arrangement, and underneath it, it says, "Congratulations on your new location." So, you know, then the businessman laughed like we're laughing now, and all the tension disappeared, and he left that florist shop and he went and told his friend what had happened, and they shared a belly laugh. And so I ask you, which was the greater gift? The one that was originally intended with the message that was intended, or the laugh that they shared? The laugh that was shared between friends and the laugh that was shared between strangers. That's a gift that lasts forever, even in just that one moment where we are completely absorbed in the now and the humor and the oneness that we have. It's truly a balm for the soul when that time stands still in that way. You know the expression, lighten up. Well, it's quite literal, right? If we lighten up, then we actually lighten ourselves. We lighten our load. We feel lighter, maybe light as a feather. And we open ourselves to bring forth greater light into the world. So we get both out of just that simple expression to remind ourselves, to tell ourselves, maybe when we're watching too much news or we're just getting kind of down about, you know, tired of the pandemic, or maybe not just tired of it, we've had some serious effects that have happened in our lives because of the pandemic or other personal reasons. Whatever it is, when we find ourselves in those kinds of spaces, if we could just tell ourselves, lighten up, it can shift everything. It can bring us back then to that first pillar of enduring joy, perspective. Remember that one. When we shift perspective, everything can change. And so we can shift our perspective when we tell ourselves to lighten up, even to do some things that might bring us more joy. We could call a friend who is, you know, and just share a laugh, or we could play with an animal or play with a child. Those activities always seem to bring joy. We could watch a silly video. We could do a little jig. We could sing a silly song. There's all kinds of things we can do to break up tension. These are what I like to call funk busters. And so you can just take on any one of these funk busters and allow it to break up the heavier energies, and then you can feel that light. And be somebody who can then embody more of that light, channel more of that light out into the world. Pure humor isn't about demeaning ourselves or others. So when I say the ability to laugh at ourselves, that's not what I mean. I really mean standing together and beholding, just, you know, being human, making mistakes, doing silly stuff, doing things that, you know, maybe we didn't intend. But even in our divine knowing, we can appreciate our humanity, like Jesus and Moses, who went golfing one day. And Jesus says to Moses, watch this drive. I'm going to hit it just like Tiger Woods. And so he hits it, and it goes dog-legging off to the right and into the lake. And Moses says, no problem, I'll go get it. So Moses goes, and he parts the waters, and he walks out, and he grabs the ball, and he brings it back. And Jesus says, okay, this time I'm really going to hit it like Tiger Woods. Watch. He drives it again, dog legs over to the lake, lands right in the middle of the water. You know what happens? Moses goes, he parts the waters, he gets the ball. I don't know why the jokes always are in threes, but it seems they are. Three's a charm. That's actually what Jesus said when the ball came back. Three's a charm. So this time I'm really going to hit it like Tiger Woods. Moses says, all right, I'm watching, I'm listening. And so Jesus hits it. Guess what happens? Over into the lake once again. This time Moses looks at him and says, you're going to get it this time. Jesus says, no problem. So he goes and he walks across the water. And he's looking around and trying to find the ball. And now, by now there's like a crowd beginning to gather around the lake. And one guy says, who does this guy think he is? Jesus Christ? And Moses says, no, Tiger Woods. If you're afraid that Jesus didn't find that funny, he's laughing right now, as you can see. And he had, I think, probably a really great sense of humor. Jesus loved to party. You know, if you read the scriptures, you'll see that he loved to gather with friends. He enjoyed some wine, some food, seamless robes. I mean, he liked to have a good time, I'm pretty sure. And I think one of the things he liked to do was to remind his contemporaries of the Hebrew scriptures that they all shared. So I imagine him quoting something like this after he just laughed about his own joke. In Psalm 126:2, it says, then our mouth was filled with laughter, and our tongue with shouts of joy. Then it was said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them, with his wonderful sense of humor. I added that last part. But you know, it's true that God has this really wonderful sense of humor. Have you noticed that? There's a saying that says, you know, you want to make God laugh, tell God what your plans are. And I've noticed, too, that sometimes it's, I'll notice that sense of humor of the divine when I've, it's usually in hindsight. So I've maybe followed guidance and then, you know, realized that, oh, wow, things wouldn't have worked out very well had I not followed that guidance. That's always a funnier one than the other way around, when I didn't follow the guidance and it didn't work out at all. You know, so it's, that's when the rubber hits the road, right? When we're standing in the midst of the disappointment, when we're standing in the midst of the mess, and then we have to dig to find the humor. But it's worth doing, because with a sense of humor, everything shifts, everything changes, the light breaks through. And so that's really where the work comes in. The Dalai Lama and Archbishop do this beautifully in really heavy situations. The Archbishop talks about how, remember the Tutus and the Hutu and the Hutis, I think? The two tribes anyway in Rwanda, and the post period of time of healing after that civil war. And the Archbishop comes in and he tells a story about big nose people and small nose people. And it is so silly and so ridiculous that everybody begins to laugh in the room of both tribes, because they see how ridiculous prejudice is. That the big-nosed people decided that they were better somehow, and the small-nosed people, you know, suddenly were demeaned. And then there's all this stuff that happens right between us. And so you can imagine, with all that heavy energy, with those heavy hearts, with all that loss and tragedy and trauma, that in this room, these two groups could share a laugh like that. That is so healing, so powerful. And humor can be that for us. It takes a while to get practiced at it or get comfortable with it, I think, but we all have it within us. And it's about calling that forward. You know, there are times when we are embarrassed, and what do? Sometimes it's appropriate maybe to apologize in a situation, perhaps, depending upon what the situation is, and to then relax, to breathe, to lighten up, right? And just to know that as we do that, instead of shaming or beating ourselves up, because that is like the furthest thing from joy, right? When we are in a place of something's gone wrong, or maybe embarrassed on top of that, and then we add shame to it and beating ourselves up. Oh, that's going to be a fun day, right? So instead, we don't want to go there. And when we find ourselves sort of spiraling down into that, we can find a way to lighten up. We can even just tell ourselves, lighten up, find the light, find something of levity in here, find something to laugh about, and everything can change. So this quality lives in us. You know, I think a lot of us don't think we're very funny, and we really admire people who are funny, typically, because who doesn't love to have a good laugh? And, you know, but the truth is that if we admire it, we know this, right, in our spiritual teachings, if you see it, if you spot it, you got it. If you admire it in somebody else, it means it's being reflected from inside of you, that it's something that wants to be brought forward. And so it's just a matter of opening up, relaxing, and allowing ourselves to be a little silly. And then it comes forth. So, you know, it turns out that God wasn't always very funny. Apparently, he had serious anger management issues, according to Greg Tamblyn. And so Greg's going to tell us a little bit more about it in this brief history of God. Let's take a look.
So this one, we had an idea about how our concept of God tends to change as we grow and evolve, both personally and as a culture or even a species. Now, everybody here knows about string theory, right? Right? Yeah. This is called A Brief History of God, or G-string theory. In the beginning, there was lots of competition. Goddesses and gods of every disposition. Merciful, mean, laid back and hyper. Little baby gods that flew around in diapers. Animals, pranksters, destroyers, creators. Flute players, lute players, nymphs and satyrs. So many gods, it was hard to keep them sorted. God had multiple personality disorder. Well, keeping track of all these gods was no fun. And finally, some people said, let's cut it down to one. But the one God was angry, always finding fault. There was banishment and floods and pillars of salt. Well, why was God traumatized at an early age by standing too close to the Big Bang? Was it nature or nurture or Satan's little goblins? God had anger management problems. Well, there were other issues that mess with serenity, like this long-term question of sexual identity, the feminine divine or the male autonomous. God was so confused. Am I androgynous? And then on top of that, what was challenging the most was trying to figure out what the heck's the Holy Ghost. And God needed time off and checked into a clinic. Poor old God was becoming schizophrenic. While in for treatment, God sent some folks to teach us, like Krishna and Buddha, Muhammad and Jesus. On some things they agree, on other things they don't. And if you choose the wrong one, some say your soul is toast. Now everybody's praying by all these different rules. Muslims five times a day, Buddhists quite a few. Hindus and Christians whenever there's a need, and Unitarians would rather plant a tree. Now God's come a long way from that early dysfunction, and now science has brought us to this beautiful junction. The key to the theory is that every single thing is made up entirely of vibrating strings. Well, this is what musicians have known all along. The universe is really just one big song. And there you have it, friends. That's the story so far. We're all just musical strings in God's big guitar. We're all just God strings, G strings, and the cosmic guitar.
Well, there you have it. The bare truth. We're all just G-strings in the cosmic guitar. I am so glad we finally have that existential question answered once and for all. Who am I? So when next time somebody asks, or you're asked to do deep inquiry and meditation about that, you can just come forward with Greg Tamblyn and quote him, G-string in a cosmic guitar. It's always good for our relationships, you know, to find humor. Have you noticed that? It sort of breaks things up when there's maybe differences going on, or, you know, we all have our own little quirks. We all have different ways of doing things. So you can either let those differences be maddening, or you can let them be funny. And it's much more fun to let them be funny. So one of the things that Brenly does, when I get to tell on her because I get to talk today, so maybe sometime she'll get to tell on me. Not anytime soon, though. So anyway, one of the things that's different is about us is that when I go away, I can pretty much count on a couple things that she'll do, one or the other at least. Likely when I get back, a closet, a cupboard, or a whole room will be reorganized. And, you know, while I appreciate that, because it's great that somebody's doing it, I usually can't find stuff then. And then if it's been a while when I'm looking for the thing and she's already reorganized, she doesn't really remember where she put it. So that can be a little maddening. But the other thing that she often does is she buys something. She's a little more of a material gal than me, and so she doesn't have to go through the tedious process of, you know, talking it through with me. She can just go ahead and get it. And so so the last time I went somewhere, well, now it wasn't the last time before. So last fall, I came home, and she hadn't just bought a thing. There was a living, breathing being that she had acquired. It was a dog named Samson. She said, "Hey, this is Samson." And she says, "You know, he's just a foster dog, and we can always take him back. We're not going to be keeping him because he's a foster dog, you know. So he needed a place to stay." And, of course, I could tell she was already completely attached and in love with him, and she had named him. And so I'll show you his face in a few minutes, and you'll see why nobody could ever return him. So years ago, we were planning on adopting a child, a human being, you know, and it was a foster to adopt program and or to just straight up adoption. So we were in that process, and we actually eventually decided not to go that route because our goddaughter Grace and her mom moved in about that time, and we were so enjoying that role that we decided to just stick with that. So you can imagine my surprise when I came home in July from being away with my sister, and I found this in the driveway. Let's take a look. Yeah. So I immediately went up and made sure there wasn't a live baby in it. Whew, there was not. And come to find out, it's not a baby carriage. It's a dog carriage. I didn't even know these things existed. So it turns out we've got these two small dogs. I was always kind of a big dog person and didn't actually think small dogs were really like real dogs. And but I've really warmed up. I love it because they're on our laps and so on. Anyway, I could go on about that, but I won't go on about that because I want to talk about the dog carriage. So we put these two dogs in the dog carriage, and I said to her, "Oh my gosh, I feel so ridiculous. Here we are, you know, bringing these dogs to the park." I kind of felt like the lady with the purse and the little dog, you know, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but it's just so not my style. So there we go, you know, on this, and I tell you, in no time, I got over myself because it brings so much joy. For one thing, the dogs absolutely love it. It's better than a car ride. They can sniff and look, and yeah, they're just way into it. And then I love it because I can go faster and further with my little dogs who dig in when they don't want to go any further. I don't know if anybody else has that experience, but they just sit down, and they're like stone. And, you know, I don't want to be dragging them along, of course. So you can scoop them up now and put them in the carriage and we can keep going. And this is probably the most important one. Everyone around us gets so much joy out of these two dogs in the dog carriage. So maybe we should take a look, actually, so you can enjoy them too. So I know they look like they go together, and they do. They like look the same direction together. And anyway, so almost everybody seems to really get so much joy out of this. So they point and they laugh and they smile and they ah, so cute, and they ooh and they ah. And one day I was at an intersection with the dogs in their carriage, and this woman slowed almost to a stop, slowing traffic, and she was just staring at us, grinning ear to ear. She pulled over, turned around, kept looking and smiling, and then she rolled down her window and said, "Thank you so much. You just so made my day. You can't even know," and then drove off. And I tell you what, I will take those dogs everywhere in that little carriage. Even if I still felt ridiculous, which I don't, I wouldn't care because it brings so much joy. And it's those things that we want to do more of because that's what our world needs, right? That's what we need is a little levity, a little joy, a lightening up. So now that's what we do. And whatever it is that makes you feel ridiculous, I want to encourage you to know that spirit nudging you to move in that direction, to move into a greater experience of joy and humor. So whatever it is, feel ridiculous, lighten up, bring some levity to any mistakes that are made anywhere around you. You know, we can own this innate sense of divinity, which is this trait of humor, which I believe is really a spiritual quality, and we can connect with one another through our shared humanity when we embody this. So the world needs smiles, joy, and laughter, and you can bring it. You know, all of the crazy things, costumes, silly hats, singing out of tune, clumsy dancing, and my personal favorite, the cacophony of praying at the same time at different internet speeds on Zoom. So they're all welcome reprieves, and I invite you this week to just really take on this trait of humor and really enjoy the week and beyond, and get out of our comfort zone and fully into humor. So let's say this affirmation together and just really bring it home and hold it together throughout the week. So together, I lighten up and let myself feel ridiculous. I have fun and spread joy. And I invite you now to enjoy some contagious laughter.
Oh,